Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo, right here for you.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up because we have a great show for you today. And it is Wednesday, September 8th, 2021. Can you believe it? We're already headed to the second week of September. And we're here every week for you, Pacific Standard Time, 12 to 1 p.m. And you can listen on worldwide internet online, as well as calling in and listening online. 646-564-9742. And today we have a dynamic show for you. Once again, another wonderful expert and author. And this time it's a fuzzy, warm show just for you because we have a special guest. Her name is Gwen Cooper, and she is the author of the blockbuster bestseller Homer's Odyssey, A Fearless Failing Tale, or How I Learned About Love and Life with a Blind Wonder Cat. She's going to tell us a little bit about that, hopefully, and it'll be perfect for our cat stories today on part one of Colombo Chronicles Live. We're going to ask her a little bit about her background and about her latest book that is extremely exciting because people love animals, and who doesn't? So her title is actually delightful. It's My Life in a Cat House. And so she's going to tell us what her life is all about in a cat house. So that's going to be extremely interesting as well. Don't want to miss this wonderful interview with our great guest. And she's going to tell us about a story about a cat that brought peace to the Jews and the Arabs. So you don't want to miss out on that, and neither do I. And she's also involved in charities. And so we're going to find out about that because we know there are millions and millions of people around the world who are totally involved with their cats. I've known a couple of people, actually, who had many cats in their homes. They were totally cat lovers. And one of them, in fact, would find stray cats, and she couldn't resist, and she'd end up bringing them home. So hats off to these people who take in stray cats and take care of them. So we're going to get started in just a minute when we enter into the world of authors and experts on Colombo Chronicles Live. So touch that dial. We will be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the wonderful, wonderful Horseshoe Cafe in Benson, Arizona. It is a landmark, 100-year-old landmark that they preserved with the originals. It has the largest horseshoe light, illuminated light in the ceiling in the entire nation, probably the world. Everyone stops by there. They have home-cooked food and desserts that are out of this world and very, very popular and known for their wonderful homemade desserts.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Listen up, because now we're entering into the world of authors and experts with our very special guest, Gwen Cooper. She's right out of New Jersey, and she has penned several best-selling cat books, including My Life in a Cat House. She's going to talk to us about that and hopefully Homer's Odyssey as well. So why don't we welcome Gwen to Colombo Chronicles. Hi, Gwen. How are you doing today out there in New Jersey?
I am great, actually. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Very, very happy to have you on our show, because it's a nice, warm, furry, cozy little show today with on part one with talking about furry cats. And so millions of people love cats, as we know, and they're beautiful animals, and they're just nice to pet. And so, Gwen, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background so we can understand your love for cats?
Yeah, you know, my background, I mean, very broadly speaking, before I became a writer, was in nonprofit and also in marketing, and a lot of the intersection of that to, you know, cause marketing, as we used to call it. And I've just always been a sucker for a hard luck story, I guess, is what they always say in my family. But especially as it pertains to animals, you know, my whole family are animal lovers. And I really don't remember a time in my life when I was not sharing a home with some four-legged critter or other. And
So did your family embrace cats, or did they embrace dogs or other animals?
We were dog people. Growing up, we were very much a dog family. My father, well before it was a popular or much discussed thing, my father was a very passionate advocate for animal rescue. I actually grew up in Miami, and my father used to hang out at the stables where Miami's Mounted Police kept their horses. And those were all animal-loving police officers. And so a lot of the dogs who we rescued over the years came to us through those police officers. They had been, you know, they were puppies who were being used as bait and fighting rings and, you know, things like that.
Oh, okay. So did you find that you fell in love with the cats, and that's how you just decided that you would start writing about cats and getting involved with charities? And then tell us why you chose the title, which is so cute and delightful, My Life in a Cat House.
Yes. So what happened was, when I finally moved out and got my own place, I ended up adopting a cat instead of a dog, because I was young and working a lot and living in an apartment, and it just didn't seem like a good environment for a dog. And there's an old saying, you know, one cat just leads to another, which is very true. Also, some people like to say that cats are like potato chips. You know, you really cannot have just one. And so one cat eventually became three. I actually majored in creative writing in college, which I guess is part of the reason I ended up working in nonprofit when I graduated. But it sort of all came together eventually. 2009 was when I published my first cat book, and that was Homer's Odyssey, about my blind cat, Homer, who was then 12 years old. And that book was a big bestseller and one that really resonated with the rescue community because Homer was a special needs cat. And so it was really a combination of my own inclinations and then just this real embrace from the animal rescue community. You know, Homer became sort of like a spokescat for special needs animals. And yeah, so that's when I started, you know, becoming a lot more involved in animal rescue and supporting rescue charities. And it's work that I continue to this day.
That's wonderful. And you just never know in life how just everything starts to snowball into something that turns out to be something that you have a passion for and love and then make something out of it. And so I read that this is the second Jewish New Year, 5782, but I didn't know what 5782 stands for. I was wondering if you could tell us, and also, could you tell us the story about why you say that cats brought peace to the Middle East?
That's a little exaggeration. So 5782 actually refers to the year on the Jewish calendar, which is different from the calendar, the Western calendar that we use. So that is the year. The tradition says that that's how many years it's been since God first created the world. Science, of course, says something different, but that is what the year, you know, stems from. As far as the story about cats promoting peace in the Middle East, I found this wonderful story, actually, on YouTube. It was a wonderful rescue story that I shared with my mailing list yesterday, and it was about a cat rescuer, an Israeli cat rescuer, who received a call on Rosh Hashanah, and very observant Jews don't usually answer the phone on Rosh Hashanah. But it was an Arab acquaintance of hers who knew that she rescued cats and was calling about a kitten who, you know, a very young kitten who had been found in distress only a few blocks away from him. So she went to collect the kitten and, you know, met up with him as well as with his elderly mother who lives with him. And it was really just a story. What ended up happening was that as the kitten became well and was adopted out, these two families, this Israeli family and this Arab family, found themselves being knit closer together in their concern for this kitten and in trying to find her the right home. And when they finally did, it was also a home in the Arab quarter. There was sort of a big, you know, very festive gathering with the Israelis and the Arabs and all of whom who, you know, again, had been united in their concern for this one kitten. And I just found it to be a very moving story. I mean, I can tell you from my own personal experience that I have always found that animal rescue is one of those causes that definitely bridges the political divides, for sure, and brings people together.
Isn't that amazing? And so I know that you are concerned about the stray cats and dogs and the rescue efforts in the Kabul area now. And so what are your efforts and what are you needing people to do?
Yeah, so, you know, it's difficult. There were two organizations that Homer's Heroes, which is sort of what my rescue, my group of rescuers, what we call ourselves, and named after my cat, Homer. But there were two organizations who we were supporting. One was called NAWZAD, and that was an organization, an animal rescue organization in Afghanistan, founded by a British former Royal Marine. They were ultimately able to evacuate successfully with all of their rescue animals, with the cats and dogs. There was another organization called Kabul Small Animal Rescue, and that was led by an American woman named Charlotte Maxwell Jones. She was not able to evacuate with her cats and dogs. She actually elected to stay behind. She's still in Afghanistan trying to find a way to get these cats and dogs and also her staff. She has a very large staff. Their families, a lot of them are women veterinarians, women who are not going to be treated well under Taliban rule. So they're trying to figure out a way to get everybody out. A lot of the work right now that they're doing because of security risks is being kept very secret. Having said that, the donations are absolutely needed because as they are able to charter flights and engage other rescue efforts, I mean, money really is going to be one of the big obstacles and one of the things that those of us watching with our hearts in our throats from a distance can actually do. So I would encourage your listeners who are interested or who want to learn more to go to the Kabul Small Animal Rescue website. And again, just Google Kabul Small Animal Rescue. You will find a wealth of information. You can also find their social media accounts and start following their progress and seeing what, you know, what day by day it changes, what specifically they're asking people to do, but you can keep up with their efforts that way.
Excellent. And so do you think that if the animals, we already know about the people we're praying for, but what about the animals? Will they be at risk by the Taliban as well?
Yes, very high risk. Actually, the Taliban considers dogs to be unclean animals. They do various, you know, the best case scenario is that the animals end up as abandoned and neglected strays in the streets. That is the best case scenario. I don't want to give your listeners nightmares with some of the worst case scenarios, but they are extraordinarily unkind to dogs. And so we are very much hoping that they will be able to bring the dogs out. They don't have as much animus towards cats, but it is not a religious belief that believes that animals deserve to be treated well. And so really the best thing for these cats and dogs is to get them out of there as quickly as possible.
All right. And so how many cats do you have in your house?
I have two cats, two black cats. They are litter mates, Clayton and Fanny. Clayton actually only has three legs. We are always suckers for a hard luck story in this house. And so he's our stumpy little boy. And they are litter mates. They came to us as a bonded pair, and they are absolutely adorable. I'm a little prejudiced in their favor, obviously, but they are insanely adorable.
So are you married with children?
I am married. My husband's name is Lawrence, and we are both writers who work from home. So the last year of quarantine was not a big shock to us in many ways, because we've both been working together in the same house for the past decade or so. But we were spending even more time than usual around the cats, and I think they've gotten a little codependent. They now, when we leave the house, even if it's only for an hour, they are very excited upon our return. So we're hoping to kind of wean them back into normal life sooner than later.
So do you think that your preference is more for cats than dogs?
You know, I always describe myself as an equal opportunity animal lover. I live with cats now, and life has just sort of worked out so that I have not adopted a dog, but I still love dogs. I still love seeing other people's dogs, I spend a lot of time in shelters and rescue organizations and hanging out with dogs. It's always a little like going on vacation. You know, when I get to spend time with dogs, it's like all the fun things that you don't get to do at home most of the time, but that you really enjoy doing, you know, every so often. I'm still hopeful that before I shuffle off this mortal coil, I will share my home with a dog once again, and we will see when that happens.
So can you tell us any funny stories that happened with your cats?
That's right off the top of my head. So the story that I open Homer's Odyssey with, and this is going back a ways, but Homer was my blind cat. He was an all-black cat who had to have his eyes removed when he was 2 weeks old. So he had no eyes at all. And he used to really love tampons. They just, in his mind, made perfect cat toys because you could roll them around and there was a string at the end. And he just was very into the feminine hygiene products. And I remember one time bringing home a date and who had never met Homer. He was coming into my home for the first time, and we were greeted at the door by this eyeless black cat clutching a tampon in his mouth, you know, an unwrapped tampon. And it was a lot of things happening at one time. It was a lot of things to take in all at once, because it's not just a cat with a tampon, it's a cat with no eyes with a tampon. And so they're just, you know, an unsettling image to be sure. So that was definitely, yeah, One for the record books.
And didn't you have a mishap with some cats in Manhattan? A little adventure story there.
Yeah, you know, it's my life in a cat house, I like to say, is a memoir in stories. And so one of the stories that I recount in my life in a cat house was trying to get all three of my cats to the vet's office for an appointment at the same time. This was back in like 2005. And it was just one of those planes, trains, and automobiles kind of things where I was in a cab, the cab got in an accident. It started to rain, so I couldn't get another cab. So I ended up in a gypsy cab, and I left my cell phone in there, and then I didn't have the right address for the vet's office, so I'm wandering around the East Village in the rain with three cats, you know, under my raincoat, trying to figure out where I was. And it's a much longer – I sort of ended up inadvertently panhandling. You know, at one point I was crouched on the sidewalk trying to find my cell phone in my purse and with all these cats around me and bedraggled looking, and people just started throwing change at me. You know, assuming that I was down on my luck. And we did eventually make it to the vet's office intact. That is a small summary of the story. But if you have ever tried to wrangle multiple pets or, you know, pets and kids or just a lot of different things at the same time, I think you will appreciate the story.
Exactly. That's a great story. I like it. I think people can relate to it. We're like, one thing goes wrong and everything's going wrong.
Oh, and it just snowballs from there, you know? And I'm like, what is my name, Ziggy? Like, why is everything bad happening to me and why is it all happening today? Yeah, just a bad, bad day. But it made for a funny story later on, so I guess it was not a total loss.
And you wrote other books, too. What are some of the other books you wrote?
So I also have a collection, you know, again, it's another, another memoir, with tales about my cats called Spray Anything. And that is available on Amazon. I also have a book called The Book of Possum, 101, wait, what is it? Head Bonks, Raspy Tongues, and 101 Reasons Cats Make Us So, So Happy. I also have a novel actually narrated from the perspective of a rescue tabby named Prudence, and that is called Love Saves the Day, and that is named for a famous East Village vintage store that was actually featured in the movie Desperately Seeking Susan with Madonna a million years ago.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
And do you have any YouTube videos?
There are some YouTube videos out there of me reading from the book and things like that. If you YouTube Homer's Odyssey, if you go to YouTube and search Homer's Odyssey or Homer Blind Cat, they should come up. I also have a podcast myself, and that is also aired on YouTube as well, and that's called Curl Up with a Cat Tail. So if you, I wish I had like a short and quick link to give. I sadly do not, but if you... All of these things will turn up in a very simple, basic search.
Cool. So are there like too many cats to even count that are homeless today? Because we see these ads on television and online about so many cats that are homeless today.
Yeah, so... You know, I would say broadly there are two kinds of quote-unquote homeless cats. There are true domestic cats, stray cats, who should be indoors and in homes with families. They do not do well on their own. And then there are feral cats. And feral cats really are not domesticated. They are not necessarily – they would not necessarily do well as indoor cats. And so I like to distinguish between the two because there are a lot of programs that are specifically addressed toward the feral cat population and making sure that their numbers don't expand and that they do not become pests in the areas where they are. But, you know, trap, neuter, return is what it's called. And the idea is that you trap the cats, you neuter and spay them so that they can't reproduce, and then you re-release them to the area that they know. And this helps keep the cat population stable and keeps the cats from creating more cats, basically. So we in rescue, we really do like to distinguish between those two. And, of course, there are always more cats in need of homes, right, than there are homes to take them in, and which is why I always like to encourage people to adopt, don't shop, as we say in rescue. Mm-hmm. I don't have a moral problem necessarily with people going to breeders or people who want a specific breed of cat, but I always like to encourage people to consider adoption from a shelter or rescue facility first, because you really are saving a life that way.
Seriously, yes, I agree with that. My daughter has like 4 cats at her house.
See, 4, I was just talking to someone earlier. 4 is a good number. 4, you know, 5, it depends. Then you start getting into, well, how big is that house and can it really accommodate 5 or more cats? But 4 is a good number. The most I've ever had at one time is 3. I would probably have more. My husband is always, but if it were not for him, I'd probably have cats, you know, stuffed up to the rafters in here. But 4 is a good number.
Yeah, she started out, like you said, with the potato chips and can't just eat one. And before you know it, the kids had brought another one and another one and another one.
That's the way it always
became
goes.
Became part of the family.
Yep.
But they also have
that
dogs,
is what they do.
Too. So, so they have 5 additional lives to feed and care
for. That sounds like a really fun house. Maybe not so much for the dog.
It is.
Sounds like the dog is really outnumbered.
The dog actually is one of those, I can't remember the name of him, but he's a great big dog that looks like a big teddy bear with lots of curly hair. You can't see his eyes hardly. And he's just like a big teddy bear. And he's really gentle with the cats, which is, you know, amazing. They take over his bed.
I mean, is he one of those dogs who thinks he's a cat?
I don't know, because he lets them drink out of his water bowl. He lets them drink out of eat his food. He lets them sleep on his bed. It's the funniest thing ever. He's like protective.
Sounds to me like the cats. I'm sorry, I was going to say it sounds to me like the cats are riding roughshod over the dog.
I think so. Well, this has really been fun and interesting too. And now's your time to shine, Gwen Cooper, and we really appreciate your talking about the cats, because especially the ones in Afghanistan, that's a really sad story, and we hope they can get the cats out of there along with the people. And yes, and we'll be praying for, we are praying for everybody to get out safely, and hopefully they can bring their cats with them. And and I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, because, you know, we need people to protect the animals. So this is your time to shine, Gwen Cooper, and you can tell our audience any messages you want, any contact information, and especially how to buy your book.
Yeah, you know, so I never feel like I, you know, on the fly in interviews, I always think afterwards, like, I really should have explained this, and I should have said that. But the good news is that all the information you could ever want about me or my books lives on my website, and that is gwencooper.com, GwenCooper.com. You'll find a full list of books that I've already published, books that I have coming out in the near future. If you want to send me an email or listen to my podcast or basically, you know, read my bio or find out anything else about me, you can do all of those things and more on my website.
Fantastic. And they can also get your book, too, at Amazon.com.
Yes. Yes, no, absolutely. Yes, you will find links to where you can purchase all of my books currently in print.
Yes. And the hot book off the press is My Life in a Cat House. And we want to thank you so much, Gwen Cooper, for joining us from New Jersey. And stay safe and keep those cats safe. And God bless you. And thank you so much for being on Columbo Chronicles.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too.
And Gwen Cooper has left the building. And be sure to get her book. It's really fun. It has some tearful parts, and it also has fun and entertaining parts. And the title is just delightful, My Life in a Cat House. And so that's easy to remember. And just go to her website or Amazon.com. And on that note, we're going to enter into the world of issues of the day, and we will be back in just a moment, so don't touch that dial.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car... Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion? Not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up to Columbo Chronicles Live. You're listening to The Rose. And boy, do we have some interesting topics as we enter into the world of politics. Bombshell, CDC admits death rate from COVID greatly overstated. I think we knew that because CDC admitted that they had inflated the numbers since 2019. In fact, it's only about half as deadly as we've been told for the past 20 months. And this is reported on Freedom Headline. So you can check out the entire story. For the United States, that would mean that the death rate is potentially 1% or less than 1% of all who have been infected. More than 80% of Americans 16 and older have some level of immunity against the coronavirus, mostly through vaccination, a survey of blood donation indicates. The survey led by the CDC also indicates that about twice as many people have been infected with the virus as have been officially counted. More than 39 million Americans have been diagnosed with coronavirus infection since the pandemic started in 2020. It started in 2019. They worked with 17 blood collection organizations working in all 50 states plus Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico to test blood covering 74% of the population. In the end, they tested about 1.4 million samples. In July 2020, before any vaccine was available, 3.5% of samples carried antibodies to SARS-CoV-2, the virus that caused COVID-19. That rose to 11.5% by December, Journal JAMA. By May, 83.3% of samples had antibodies to the virus, most of them from vaccination. So what's really going on here? How can such a large percentage of the population who have antibodies start coming down with the virus all of a sudden at a rate that is comparable to the beginning of this year? If you ask me, I think it may have something to do with the vaccines, but I don't have any evidence according to this article, but maybe it's the Delta variant. But from the early data that this person saw, the writer, this variant was actually less virulent than the previous variants. It is more contagious, but not as powerful. That's the natural result of viruses over time. And so we are still learning about all of this. And Dr. McCullough wrote an article, Story at a Glance. Judge exceeds his jurisdiction. Chicago judge strips child custody from an unvaccinated mother. Well, as a longtime consumer advocate for justice who was leading marches in a grassroots movement back starting in the early 90s through the early 2000s, exposing thousands of Americans across this country going through divorce who lost custody of their children, even if they were non-offending parents, and had never been accused of any abuse of their children, ended up having their children taken away during divorce. And some of the mothers ended up in jail because they were fighting for their children and who were taken away from them, even though they were non-offending. They were non-abusers. And the CPS workers, not all of them, but those involved, were removing children from divorcing parents. And many times these parents never got their children back. They were made state wards of the state and or placed in foster home. Earlier we were talking about rescuing cats, which is important, but we were trying to rescue children who were taken away from good parents who filed for divorce and for unknown reasons were removed from their custody. And then I met with Senator John DeCamp. I had AMFM radio shows and a cable television show that I hosted and produced. It was a reality show, maybe the first, I don't know, beginning in 1989. It was entitled Women Fight Back for Legal Justice. And then the name was changed to Issues of the Day because more men were also coming aboard this movement across this nation that hit the news nationally and locally. And so we held candlelit vigils, we marched, we protested, we proposed laws, including myself, that were implemented by legislators, and myself, even nationally, proposed laws that were implemented and to make a difference in the nation. But unfortunately, there was an organization called NAMBLA, and we did an extensive report on NAMBLA, and we discussed it on television, cable television, with the person who actually was a high school teacher and did a lot of the research behind it. And we presented this report to the proper people in positions of power and asking them to investigate, and because children were at risk. And then Senator John DeCamp flew out to meet with me, and we met, and I invited three other ladies on our who were members of our organization and were experiencing these injustices as well. We had people from all walks of life, lawyers, believe it or not. I helped out a judge who was falsely accused, also, and hit the news, and men and women, both sides of the aisle, who were trying to get their children back from the state or from foster care. Some of the children were never seen again or heard from again. But this was all ignored because the mainstream media ignored it, as well as people in general, because they were not victims of these situations. And until they became victims, this movement began to expand across the nation. So Senator John DeCamp flew out because he had written a book entitled The Franklin Cover-Up, and it was about child trafficking, kidnapping kids and child trafficking, and it went to the highest levels in the country. And I interviewed him twice on my cable television show. And the things he stated were so shocking, even my brain couldn't comprehend the evil that has been going on for a very long time in this country and around the world. I'm assuming that Jeffrey Epstein was a key player in this child trafficking, because he was the international child trafficker kingpin. And he had friends in high places that were very wealthy as well. So children were not being protected, and no one was protecting them. They were protecting Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, it appears. So Senator John DeCamp was a hero, and he wrote the book, The Franklin Cover-Up. And people didn't want to believe it, and the general public, because it's very difficult to believe that this type of evil could possibly be going on in the United States of America, around the world, but not in the United States of America. We were not raised or brought up to believe that such evil could be happening in our country. So anyway, he said that, which made sense and shocked me and the audience. He said that there were caseworkers, social workers, who were taking bribes to remove children, small children, from homes, and then the parents never saw them again because they were taken by child traffickers. So it was bribes for kids. So then it started to make sense why so many children were being taken away through the family law courts by caseworkers, not all, but the ones involved who were taking the bribes, and the social workers were taking minor children away from the parents during divorce and using divorce as the catalyst to do it. And the judges never balked at anything that the caseworkers were doing and recommended. So when you tell me that people with titles should be trusted, why were millions of kids missing in America and around the world, and nothing was done about it in 40 or 50 years? These are people with titles who we trusted, pay their wages, pay their benefits, pay their pensions, pay their health care, who did nothing. And those who spoke out or wrote books were threatened. Senator John DeCamp told me he and his family had been threatened. The chair of the committee had been threatened, and he died. Reporter with the evidence was flying to meet with the chair prior to his death, and he was flying his small plane with his son in the plane, his young son, minor child, and the plane blew up with the evidence. So when you trust people just because they have a title or a Harvard Law degree or they went to Yale or Stanford or Oxford, some of them bought their way through, their parents, their wealthy parents. Some of them nearly flunked out, but they still passed. You have to remember, it doesn't make somebody a decent, honest person of integrity with values and principles and who will uphold, protect, defend, and preserve the United States Constitution, the United States, to protect the welfare and safety and health of Americans and the children, and secure the borders, uphold legal migration, legal citizenship, legal voting rights. Because anyone who crosses over the border illegally is a criminal. And the Democrats can spin it any which way they want. But according to the law books, that is aiding and abetting and harboring criminals who violate our sovereignty laws, our federal and state laws, when they migrate into this country illegally. And aiding and abetting and harboring illegals is illegal. So they can spin it any way they want by blaming people, pointing the finger at those who believe in the rule of law, and accuse us of being racist. Absolutely. So ridiculous. We are the only country in the world until 2009, when Obama and Biden opened up our borders with all the Democrats on board and started flooding our nation with third world people, that overflowed into Canada and into Europe. And prior to that, we already, since the Constitution of the United States was signed by our framers and approved by we the people, that we implemented legal immigration. We implemented legal immigration as the law of the land in this great republic that is operated by the rule of law. And that's why people swear an oath on the Bible, or are supposed to swear an oath on the Bible, not a foreign book where they pledge their allegiance to foreign ideologies and foreign nations and their loyalty, or to the New World Order, because you cannot have two masters. That is why the framers said you place your hand on the Bible and you swear an oath to uphold, defend, protect, and preserve the United States Constitution, not foreign ideologies, not illegals, not anti-Americans, not foreign enemies, not domestic enemies. But everything was turned upside down, and it's been going on for a very long time, and it started to rear its ugly head in the 70s when liberalism was rearing their ugly head to break down the family unit, to make women feel as if being a housewife and a mother was a useless and ungrateful job, that women needed to leave the homes and leave their children and go to work, led to the latchkey kids, broken homes. There wasn't any child care out there, and it was unaffordable. It led to the infiltration of drugs into the United States of America, and that was by communists and foreign enemies, nations who sought to take down our country by destroying the minds of the youth. You destroy the minds of the youth, and you can destroy a nation. So then they fried their brains, or they ended up dead, or they ended up going to jail. But the drug lords didn't. Just those, they recruited the kids in America living in the inner cities who took the fall. So we have all this, we had all this going on, but people weren't paying attention because the money was good. There was plenty of jobs. People were buying bigger homes, more cars, more television sets, and so forth, more vacations, and so forth. So more children were being drawn into drugs. More children were being kidnapped and trafficked around the world. And no one was stopping it because there was bribes going on. There was white envelopes being passed around. There were people in the judicial system who were actually stealing property from the litigants, and assets and money, because they could. Who is going to stop them? Very few judges have ever been removed from the bench. Probably less than 1%. Very few judges have ever been sent to prison. So it's a them against us society that they created. And so we have these children that no one was saving. And this has been going on for a very long time. Open borders with traffickers still coming in. Jihadists, terrorists, cartels, gang members, unidentified people. And our government is using our tax dollars to fund them, Well, they locked us down and destroyed our businesses, our jobs, our income, our freedom, liberty, rights. They took it away because we let them. They had no authority to indefinitely lock down the American people. It's a flu. And under the guise of health care, they're threatening to lock down Americans again. That would totally devastate this country. Totally devastate the minds of young people, because there are already so many disturbed children now because of the isolation and the elderly people being isolated from their family and friends. Why aren't they talking about your health? Why aren't they talking about your immune system? Why aren't they talking about which vitamins and supplements and minerals and foods and healthy drinks and berries and oranges and grapefruits and sunshine and laughter and touching that people need to thrive? People need sunshine. They need fresh air. They need to go to the ocean and breathe in the ions. These are the things that keep the brain healthy, keep the cells healthy, and keep your immune system healthy. We have 22 trillion viruses in our bodies. We can never get rid of viruses. Every living organism has viruses. So the New World Order billionaires think that by destroying the 90% of all humanity and all living organisms on the earth that God created for food and enjoyment are going to reduce the carbon monoxide, as Bill Gates says, down to zero, so that 10% of the population can live. And all this is being done under big pharma and health, under the guise of health care, saving lives, saving the planet, when the goal was to reduce the population by 90%, get rid of cows, get rid of horses, get rid of dogs, get rid of cats, get rid of pigs and chickens, and create Monsanto's GMO, non-nutritional, lab-grown foods and molecular meats by buying up all the farmland to control it, buying up all the ranch land to control it and get rid of all the horses. The big picture is far uglier than a flu. A story at a glance by Dr. Mercola. August 10, 2021, a Cook County, Illinois judge, Illinois Democrat, stripped a mother of her parental rights during a child support hearing because she refused to get a COVID jab due to bad vaccine reactions in the past. Let me tell you something. A bad vaccine reaction can cause death immediately, or it can be a very painful death. So what's the difference? If this mother has an allergy and she knows it and she almost died in the past, or she became so ill in the past that she knows that she cannot be vaccinated with chemicals, possibly gene therapy, possibly stem cells, possibly nanoparticles of mercury and aluminum, possibly a nanometal particle, possibly a toxic secret, trade secret known as graphene oxide that's poisonous to human bodies, possibly ethanol oxide and phosphorus, which are cancerous, and any household products that you have in your house or auto products will have a warning label by the FDA, but they're willing to inject it into your body and claim that there's no direct adverse health effects, or that you can't die immediately or within weeks or months or 1 or 2 or 3 years down the road or longer. There's no way to prove it, that it's it was the vaccine, as they keep saying, well, we have no proof that after those two jabs that the reason she died, the reason she became paralyzed or he became paralyzed or they had heart attacks or strokes or brain injuries or inflammation and blood clots is connected to the jabs, even though they were healthy before they got the two jabs. Besides, it's minor. It's expected. So these are the excuses they're using. Because it's not them. It's not them that might die. It's not them or their loved ones who are being injured. And they have no criminal or financial liability because it's a self-protecting system that made sure that Big Pharma and people like Bill Gates, George Soros, all these investors who are seeking to make billions of dollars from these never-ending jabs that are FDA-approved experimental and trial injections. They are not approved with case studies, short and long-term, published in medical journals naming the direct adverse health effects to human beings. And they are not licensed. They are not licensed vaccines. So therefore, using an FDA experimental and trial injections means they have no liability. Insurance companies have no financial liability. Anyone involved has no financial liability because they're experiments and trials. But this is the bottom line. In the past, the people who were injected or took prescription drugs that were experimental and trial, approved experimental and trial by the FDA, were willing and in agreement and a signed mind with a signed consent form, willing to take those prescription drugs or vaccinations or injections because there were no other alternatives. They'd run out of alternatives and they were going to die. Or they were very, very ill and they ran out of options. So this is why that was created. It wasn't created to force people to be human lab rats for Big Pharma case studies. And if you drop dead, oh, well, you're just a case study. Just report the deaths to VAERS. Well, I got news for you. That isn't the way that constitutional rights and human rights reads or civil rights or the necessities of life, that we are going to threaten the American people with denying and prohibiting freedom, liberty, and rights, and we're going to deny them work, and we're going to treat them differently than anybody else because they resist being used as human lab rats, property, chattel, slaves, and used for servitude for wealthy people invested in Big Pharma. And it's alleged that Pfizer has contracts in the billions with the United States, USA, Israel, and the UK using taxpayer money to fund this worldwide, what I call the Big Pharma experimental and trial jabs industrial complex. So this mother had her child taken away because she has allergic reactions to chemicals and could probably die or end up in ICU near death and very, very ill, or be permanently injured for life. So it says, August 10, 2021, a Cook County, Illinois judge stripped a mother of her parental rights during a child support hearing because she refused to be a human lab rat, basically. That isn't what it says. It's what I'm saying. Due to bad vaccine reactions in the past, August 30th, 2021, judge reversed his decision to keep the mother from seeing her son after public backlash and involvement from the Illinois divorce bar. A number of judges around the USA have started using the COVID shot as a reward or punishment tool, but should opting in or out of a medical treatment really determine your ability to get a fair treatment in the judicial system? No, it should not. No, it should not. Judges are not our doctors. Judges are not there to force people to be human lab rats, especially when they have a medical condition, especially when they have an allergy. There are the HIPAA laws, and the HIPAA laws say that Americans have a right to confidentiality and secrecy when it comes to their medical records, and it's between them and their doctor. It's not between them and their employer, them and their coworkers, them and social media, them and Dr. Fauci, them and Mr. Gates and Mr. Soros, and them and Big Pharma and so forth, or the judge. That isn't what the Constitution reads. That isn't what the Nuremberg Codes read. That isn't what the Necessities of Life laws read. That isn't what civil rights read. That is not what the laws on slavery, servitude, property, chattel, as human lab rats reads. So on that note, just know that there's the possibility, if you're in a divorce case and you aren't jabbed, you may run into another left-wing judge who wants to remove your child because even after you told him, I have allergies, I cannot be jabbed with chemicals, he doesn't care. So you may end up needing another lawyer and having another case that's going to cost you more money down the road. And on that note, I want to say God bless you. God bless America. And remember, injustices can happen to you, and they can happen to me. But together, we can make a positive difference. Remember, you're never alone when you tune into Columbo Chronicles Live.
Rose Columbo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Columbo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Columbo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Columbo Chronicles.